Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 7, Knowledge of the Absolute, text number 23. Antavantu palam tesham.
Antavantu palam tesham.
Tadvavat yopamedasam.
Devan deva
yujo yanti.
Madhvaka
yanti mamapi. Antavat. Perishable. Two. But. Palam. Fruit. Tesham.
There.
Tat.
That.
Bhavati.
Becomes.
Alpamedasam. Of those of small intelligence. Devan. To the demigods. Devaya
yaja,
the worshippers of the demigods.
Yanti,
go.
Mat,
my.
Bhakta,
devotees.
Yanti,
go.
Mam,
to me.
Api,
also. Translation of purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Men of small intelligence worship the demigods, and their fruits are limited and temporary. Those who worship the demigods go to the planets of the demigods, but my devotees ultimately reach my supreme planet. Purport. Some commentators on the Bhagavad Gita say that one who worships a demigod can reach the Supreme Lord. But here is clearly stated that the worshippers of demigods go to the different planetary systems where various demigods are situated. Just as a worshipper of the sun achieves the sun, or worshipper of the demigod of the moon achieves the moon, similarly, if anyone wants to worship a demigod like Indra, he can attain that particular god's planet. It is not that everyone, regardless of whatever demigod is worshipped, will reach the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is denied here. For it is clearly stated that the worshippers of demigods go to different planets in the material world. But the devotees of the Supreme Lord goes directly to the Supreme Planet of the Personality of Godhead. Here the point may be raised that if the demigods are different parts of the body of the Supreme Lord, then the same end should be achieved by worshipping them. However, worshippers of the demigods are less intelligent because they do not know to what part of the body food must be supplied. Some of them are so foolish that they claim that there are many parts and many ways to supply food. This isn't very sanguine. Anyone can supply food to the body. Can anyone supply food to the body through the ears or the eyes? They do not know that these demigods are different parts of the universal body of the Supreme Lord. And in their ignorance, they believe that each and every demigod is a separate god and a competitor of the Supreme Lord. Not only are the demigods parts of the Supreme Lord, but ordinary living entities are also. And the Srimad Bhagavatam has stated that the Brahmins are the head of the Supreme Lord, the Kshatriyas are his arms, the Vaishyas are his waist, the Shudras are his legs, and all serve different functions. Regardless of the situation, one knows that both the demigods and himself are part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. His knowledge is perfect. But if he does not understand this, he achieves different planets where the demigods reside. This is not the same destination the devotee reaches. Results achieved by the demigods' benedictions are perishable because within this material world, the planets, the demigods, and their worshippers are all perishable. Therefore, it is clearly stated in this verse that all the results achieved by worshipping demigods are perishable, and therefore such worship is performed by the less intelligent living entity. Because this pure devotee engaged in Krishna consciousness and devotional service of the Supreme Lord achieves eternal blissful existence that is full of knowledge, his achievements and those of the common worshiper of the demigods are different. The Supreme Lord is unlimited, his favor is unlimited, his mercy is unlimited, and therefore the mercy of the Supreme Lord upon his pure devotees is unlimited. Antavanta pulam te sham dadbhava yopamedasam deva deva yajo yanti madbhakta yanti mamapi. Men of small intelligence worship the demigods, and their fruits are limited and temporary. Those who worship the demigods go to the planets of the demigods. My devotee ultimately reaches my supreme planet. Again, it's telling us not to worship the demigods. But as I said yesterday, I don't think anyone here, before they joined the movement, were big demigod worshippers. And even if we left the movement, it's unlikely we'd leave in order to worship some demigod. Unless someone secretly has a deity of Lord Shiva underneath their bed and is hiding it, just waiting for the opportunity. But instead of worshiping demigods, generally people worship insignificant living entities, such as politicians or movie stars or sports heroes. We find people come out more than they attend church nowadays, they go to the sports games. They flood the movie theaters. They can't tell you who God is. They can tell you the past, present, and probably the future of their favorite rock star. Because we have to worship, it's our nature. Our first worship goes to our body. Now we may not, it may seem like an insult. What do you mean I'm worshiping my body? I am the body. Why are you accusing me of worshiping? But from the point of view of being a spiritual soul, actually what we're doing is just worshiping our body, which happens to be dead. Sorry for the bad news. Because as I said before, no one dies. Nor does the body die. Sometimes, all right, the soul doesn't die, but what about the body? But the body doesn't die either. Because something that's already dead can't die. Since the body is already dead, it can't die. Anymore, as I pointed out before, if you have a puppet in your hand, and the puppet seems to be moving, and it's a very nice puppet, and everyone loves the puppet, when you take your hand out of the puppet, and the puppet falls on the floor, any of you gently place it on the floor, of course. Because it's a nice puppet. Then everyone will look at the puppet and say, it looks like it died. What happened? Coronavirus. I'm sure they'd include the puppet also. Another one for Corona. But actually the puppet didn't die because it was never alive. So now we're worshippers of our body, and we think it's quite intelligent to worship our body. Cosmetic industry, at least in America, I'm sure they don't go broke here either, is a multi-billion dollar industry. It said that when ladies get up in the morning before they face the world, they use 27 different cosmetic products. And men use 17. They're catching up. Krishna forbid anyone sees what they actually look like. Who is this? It's your wife. I never saw you. It doesn't look like my wife. Well, I took my makeup. I've never married you. Well, maybe I should put it back on. So everyone is more or less worshiping their body, and then we transfer that worship because we want our body to feel it's special. Just like, why do people go to the movies? Because they can hardly jump a meter or a half a meter. But if they go to the movies, they can imagine they're a Superman or a Spider-Man or something. They've gotten these powers. They have no power. They barely made it to the movie theater. But now they're living a life of imagination, just like this whole bodily concept of life is also imagination. No one really, just like I'm speaking, when we're speaking, we can't really hear what we sound like. If you hear your voice recorded, you say, is that me? And we're all imagining we look like something that we really don't look like. We don't even know most of the time what we look like. We don't know what we sound like. We don't even know what we smell like. But we're imagining. Most of our existence is just an imagination. And we see someone who has a bigger imagination than we are, who has a desirable illusion, and we desire to have that illusion too, to identify ourselves with that illusion. So the material world is just an endless changing of one illusion to the next, endless worship of one thing and then changing it for some other worship, because ultimately we're looking for Krishna. But compared to us, demigods are very powerful, and in the Vedic culture, by the proper learning of the Vedic mantras, if you go to the proper priest and pray, then you get a result. It's like nowadays the scientists have become very prominent because they can give you a result. Looking for the clouds. What's that?
Not anymore.
Because the scientists can give us something, like an iPhone. I don't know how many have an iPhone, but maybe an Android? Is that what it is? What else is there? Just an iPhone and an Android? What else is there?
He knows.
What's that?
He knows.
What else besides?
It was Windows time, like when Anna, because no one bought them.
What's that? They went to Australia?
there was a Windows phone, but now no one buys them, and so they went bankrupt.
Oh. So now it's just Android and Apple. And Apple is too expensive for most people. They're rotten apples. In any case, everyone's thinking that, look at that, the scientists can make a phone, and you can do so many things on the phone, especially play video games. I mean, what more can you want? You can even check Facebook. The fires of material enjoyment, it describes how the material world is just in like the jungle, and everyone's like the monkeys are making different faces of each other. Wow. And they think that's progress. They'll spend the whole, face week. Yeah, I got up and I ate toast today. Wow. Send that on Instagram to 5,000 people. Toast, check. I like it. And they think that's life. And if they hear about the personality of Godhead was unlimited beauty, unlimited strength, unlimited fame, unlimited wealth, unlimited renunciation, unlimited strength, they think, oh, big deal. What's the big deal? I got my Facebook. Look at the monkey. Wow. So they hear about Krishna, they go, oh, that's ridiculous. How can I take that seriously? It's my Facebook, my friend. Wow. Therefore, Bhagavad Gita Krishna explains step by step about the eternality of the soul, about how he's controlling the material energy, how he's a super soul. So people have to take it step by step, and then gradually they might actually understand and even accept that Krishna might exist. And that it might be nice to meet someone who has unlimited beauty. You mean he's almost as beautiful as Marilyn Monroe? Well, almost. So we can't imagine, not only we can't imagine, we can't accept, we can't imagine. What does it mean? It means nothing to us, because we have no experience. Unlimited strength. So therefore Krishna says, Gamaham, Gamavishya Chabhutani Daryamaham Ojasa, that I enter into the planets, and by my strength, by my energy, they all stay in their orbits. So we have to use our intelligence and think, how is it possible by chance all these planets are moving in an orbit? And if we don't see all the planets, at least we know the sun comes up at a certain time and the sun goes down at a certain time. How can this be by accident? Do we have any experience of any accident going on like that? Now, certainly the sun is bigger than we can, we have no idea how big it actually is, but it's quite big. And it's being controlled. Therefore, within our experience, we know that there's some intelligent person moving the planets, especially the sun, in its orbit. Now, we don't know who it is. We never saw them. And we don't know how they do it. But we can accept we don't know so many things. So why should we reject the fact that there could be a person who's the source of everything? Otherwise, where did everything come from? Do we actually believe everything came out of nothing? Does that make any sense? And then, so, how could everything come out of nothing? Because if everything came out of nothing, why don't more things come out of nothing? Why did nothing got tired after creating everything? Decided to rest. When it gets strong again, when nothing gets a good night's sleep, then it'll start creating again. Because there's in nothing, there's no night, so it may be a long time. Now it makes no sense, but then again, most people are nonsense. But for an intelligent person, they can understand that there is control in the universe, and the energies must have come out of something, and ultimately we trace it back. We can find who's the most beautiful, who's the strongest, who's the most intelligent. And then when we come to the person who's the most beautiful, most intelligent, that's the Supreme. So logically, there must be a Supreme. Otherwise, why are there different gradations of opulence in the world? That there's always someone superior. And if there is planets being moved in their orbits, who's ever doing it, is a lot stronger than we are. We can throw three balls up in the air and they don't fall down. We consider to be expert juggler. So try it with a few planets after you have some practice. And do it for millions of years and we'd be quite impressed. We'd put you in, on the candidate list to be God. But until that, you're not even eligible to run for the post. So we don't know many things, but we can try to read Bhagavad Gita, try to understand. We don't have to accept blindly that Krishna is God, or even that there are demigods. But then again, if there are no demigods, where did the rain come from? Who's controlling the rain? Who's controlling the air? Who's controlling the planet? Where is it all coming from? We don't know, actually. But here it's being said it's coming from intelligent people. But if there was no rain, there was no sunshine, there was no air, we wouldn't be here to speculate where it all came from. So these are gifts given to us. We didn't supply it. We didn't, go on the internet, can you send me some sunshine? I need, 5 million gallons of air, please send it. Yes, Amazon.com. It's on bargain. It's on a bargain. Today we half price on air. We'll send it by drone. Now it's all being supplied to us, and people have the nerve to look around and say, oh, it's coming out of nothing. Just like if you're on your birthday, your parents give you 15 gifts, expensive gifts, and then your friend said, where did it come from? It came from nothing. Your parents are standing right there and go, wow, we just spent our whole salary on your gifts, and now you're claiming it came from nothing? Mm-hmm. What would they feel like? So we're walking around, thanks a lot, you know, for the sun. You know, there should be a sun, because then it could shine on me. It has some, there should be air so I can breathe it. And the person it all comes from, the only thing we say, he's not there, he doesn't exist. That's the appreciation we have. And if we glorify him, yes, he might be there, but unfortunately he has no eyes, he's blind. He has no ears, so he's deaf. He has no legs, so he's crippled. We worship him anyhow because we feel sorry for him. He's deaf, he's blind, he's crippled. So therefore we worship him. We go to the church and we pray to him. We hope you get better. No, it's being what we call ungrateful. So practically speaking, everyone in the material world is ungrateful. They're getting so many things from Krishna, from God, and instead of appreciating, offering some, sending him a thank you note, thank you, you know, no, sorry, I would send you a thank you note if I thought you existed. Unfortunately, you're not even there. And if you are there, we feel sorry for you, because as far as we're concerned, you're blind, you're deaf, you're crippled, you're stupid, but we love you anyhow. I love God. Who's God? Well, he's love. What does he look like? He doesn't look. Because he's blind. Or if they say he does look like, they have some old man on a chair. He can't, he's this blank stare on his face. He's just sitting there condemning people to death, to hell. Ah, you stupid soul. Hell. Oh! Another one. Puff. So the conception. Who in their right mind would worship such a person? So God's presented like, at best, God's presenting like that. Or else at worst, oh, he's love. He's whatever. And if we present, as Prabhupada said in his conversation, we present, here's God, most intelligent, most beautiful, the strongest. What is a better definition for God? People say, oh, we're searching. We're just trying to figure it out. Come up with a better definition for God than the person who has all beauty, all strength, all knowledge, all fame, all wealth, all renunciation. They say, well, we're searching. Well, here it is. Give us tell us a better definition. And if you don't believe us, read Bhagavad Gita and see if Krishna doesn't have perfect knowledge. And if you can't find anything wrong in Bhagavad Gita, if he's explaining everything perfectly, why don't you accept him? And then follow him. Because maybe then you'll make some progress. No, we're searching. We're searchers. We're better than you are because we're searching. You found it, so you're unfortunate because you have no opportunity to search. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Anyone searching? Yes.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for the class. I had a question in terms of the demigod worship. We see in the Krishna's pastimes how Ananda Maharaj, he yearly worshipped Lord Indra, even though he was a devotee of...
One year he skipped.
My knee is here. Other than that being part of the pastime, is there any other explanation as to why he would worship Indra, even though, I don't know, he was a worshipper of Krishna or Vishnu?
No, actually he's a worshipper of Narayan. Right. He doesn't worship Krishna. He loves Krishna. He serves Krishna. And he worships Narayan in order to protect Krishna. So the devotees in Vrindavan especially, everything they do is for Krishna. So even if he's worshipping Krishna as an agriculturalist, still it was for the benefit of Krishna and the devotees there. Besides that, if they didn't have that pastime, Nanda Maharaj worshipping Indra, then we wouldn't have Govardhan Leela. We wouldn't have all these nice Govardhan hills that we, you know, the halava and everything else he. So that's ultimately why he performed that worship. It was an opportunity to get some nice prasadam. Anything else? All right, thank you very much. Grandaraj Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai.